Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
We all know that food scarcity has become a real issue for all South Australians, and cost of living is impacting on everybody. We go to the supermarkets and prices have increased, and now it's just so hard to feed a family. Fortunately, there's an organisation in South Australia that's doing a lot of work and has been for many years to address that. That's Food Bank SA. We're very privileged today to have Greg Patterson, CEO of Food Bank SA, with us to talk about what they're doing, not only here in South Australia, but they're now pushing out to other parts of the country. Welcome, Greg.
Hi, Kerry.
Greg, let's talk about food scarcity first. And look, I was a bit shocked to see in the paper that Coles and Woolies have just posted a $1 billion profit amongst all of these cost of living squeezes. And yet when we all go to the supermarket, we're finding less in our basket for more. What's your thoughts around where we're at with food scarcity?
We know obtaining food is getting increasingly difficult for ordinary working families. And part of that is the cost of the food. And there's all sorts of reasons that we're being given as to why that happens. So if we go through the actual raw materials, the farmers on the East Coast particularly have been impacted over the last few years with floods and fires and bushfires and storms and things like that. So that has meant that there has been difficulty for some of the major food manufacturers such as Edgells and SBC to get locally produced fruit or vegetables. What that's meant is the price on all of those raw commodities has actually increased quite substantially. And we don't expect that's going to improve until the farmers get back on stream again, hopefully in the next couple of years. The bushfires in the Adelaide Hills, for example, with the apple growers, we know that's at least 7 years before apple farmers will start to get the yields that they had prior to the bushfires. So it's not going to be a quick, easy thing just growing a few extra fruit and vegetables. It's, in some cases, it is going to take some time. On top of that, we know that there has been significant increases in electricity across the country. Again, the raw material, the food manufacturers are tackling that. The freight companies that we're having to pay for most of the product to come across to South Australia. Price of fuel has gone up substantially. I think I seem to remember in COVID we were paying maybe $1 a litre. We're up around the $2 a litre now. And the federal government imposed taxes on the major transport companies as well. So before it even hits Woolworths and Coles, the price of all of those raw materials and all of those foodstuffs has increased quite substantially so. Now, Woolworths and Coles, and to a lesser degree Foodland, will never ever, they're not going to sell at a loss, so they will always have their margins.
No, they have shareholders.
That's exactly right. So they will always have margins on things like that, but to some respects it could be argued they're just selling real estate space in their stores. So the prices have definitely gone up in the supermarkets, but it's not necessarily all the fault of the supermarket chains. Some of it can actually be go right back to the raw materials. And the reason I can say that is because we're seeing exactly the same cost pressures. We buy a good 40% of the food that we distribute, and it's the foods that we just don't get enough donated, milk and meat and tinned fruit and tinned vegetables. In some cases, we're paying double what we were 2 years ago.
That's a phenomenal jump. So, Greg, let's talk about Food Bank. What an amazing organisation. Talk us through the history and how it's come to be what it is today, services you provide.
It's a really interesting place. Food Bank started in the United States. The concept of redistributing surplus food started in the United States, I think, in about the 1980s. It spread to Australia during the 1990s. New South Wales opened up. South Australia, we opened our doors in the year 2000. It was at the initiative of a gentleman called Lee Royans, who was our founding CEO and still works for us. He runs our fruit and veg program still. If he was in here today, he would just give you the long history of the place. But there was a lot of people involved. The health minister at the time was Dean Brown. The governor at the time was Sir Eric Neil, and he got involved. And Stephen Gerlach, who was very well known with Santos and people like that, became the first chairman. Stephen opened up all sorts of doors to enable Food Bank to get the peppercorn leases on properties and things like that and convince government to get behind us. So Food Bank started operating in the year 2000 at the same location we are now on Crossroad, although it was much smaller then. And over a period of the years, we've become quite a trusted organisation. We're seen as being, we have a very single-minded purpose, which is to get food to the most vulnerable in the community. And the way we do that is through a variety of models. And because I think much as we've had substantially less funding as a percentage than our colleagues in other states have, but to some extent, that's actually forced us to be creative and entrepreneurial and to look at finding partnerships that will enable us to get the food out to people without necessarily just putting our hand out to the government and doing that. If we just relied on government funding, we would have gone broke many, many years ago.
Well, and also then you are subject to changes in government and changes in government policy as well.
Mm, exactly right. So gradually over a period of years, we still have 700 charities now that rely on our services. That's in South Australia alone, that either get food from us. You know, the Hutt Street Centre was our first client 20-something years ago, and they still get food from us. But we've gradually moved the model to one where it's more direct to the person. We've opened up what we call food hubs, which try to recreate a supermarket experience for people to shop with a lot more dignity than they would if they were getting a handout or a hamper of food. They get choice. They can choose ethnically appropriate foods or nutritionally appropriate foods for those people who have got gluten intolerance, those sort of things. So it probably could be argued now that we're a food distribution business with a retail arm that just happens to be a charity.
Interesting when you look at it that way. So Greg, just explain how the products actually end up in your supermarket and do people pay and how are they eligible to come and buy from your supermarket?
Sure. We get food from a whole variety of sources. The first one is Food Rescue. We where the supermarket's chains at the warehouse level. We actually go right back to their warehouses. They give us the food that would have otherwise been thrown away. The Woolworths, Coles and Metcash are probably three of the biggest suppliers. We also get about 2 million kilos of fresh fruit and vegetables donated directly from the farmers every year, and that goes directly to our storage area at the produce markets at Paraka, the commercial produce
market. Is that spoiled food, but it's still fine?
No, that we actually make? We actually get commitments from the growers as to what they're going to give us in the coming season.
Fantastic.
So there is the stuff that's too big, too small. You know, we've got carrots in there at the moment that weigh about a kilo each.
Lucky bunnies.
Yeah. But we also get, because the farmers want their product to go to places that where it has impact, and we can demonstrate that it does have impact. So where they overproduce, they can confidently donate the food to us and they know it's going to be put to good use. We have a national network of people that go to the food manufacturers, the likes of Sanitarium, the milk companies, the meat companies, and we beg, borrow, blackmail, hassle, threaten, whichever way you like, to get them to donate food to us. And if they can't donate food to us, then we ask them to give us very cheap prices. So we can buy pasta, for example, for 20 cents a pack. And we have national buying programs that buy what we call the key staples. There's about 20 products that we would buy nationally to make sure that we have enough of those particular things. And that's things like milk, meat, tuna, tinned fruit, tinned vegetables, pasta sauces. All of those foods then come to our main warehouse and we distribute them out to all the various sites around South Australia and Northern Territory for them to give out or to put up in the supermarket. The supermarket pricing is very simple. It's free of charge for fruit and vegetables and bread, and everything else is about $2.50 a kilo.
Amazing.
So what that means is $20, and we work on the basis of around 6 to 1. So $20 at our food hubs gets about $120 retail value. Mm. A $30 spend would fill up a shopping trolley and then some.
So do you do, it's all food, it's not any cleaning, any basic supplies?
We do have cleaning products, personal products. We never ran out of toilet paper during COVID because the food...
You would have been popular.
We were, with our staff and our volunteers. I don't know whether I told you this story. I went into my local supermarket one day during the height of that panic buying and there was no peanut butter. But all that happened was that a woman had gone in there in the morning and bought 5 jars because she had a party
or something.
It was a football club thing or something like that, or she was making satay sauce or something. Another woman saw her buy that and thought, she must know something I don't.
Oh, no.
So she bought, I'll buy 5 things as well. And the checkout girl said, before we knew it, all the peanut butter was gone. And then they started moving down through the Nutella and the other things because they thought they'd missed something.
So a trendsetter. We can do that now. Eggs.
Yeah. I'm sure someone one day will do a PhD study on the panic buying. But there was no threat to the toilet paper
industry. Well, we produced it in South Australia down at Mount Gambier. We actually produced it.
Yeah.
So literally you could go in there as you would a normal supermarket and buy most things that you need.
Correct. So we won't have 5 different brands of toilet paper. We'll have 1.
And saves and time, less choice.
Yes. Yeah, so we'll buy the cheapest one for the quality we want. But we do have shaving gear, personal products, feminine hygiene products, pet food, because the furry babies all need to be fed as well. Shampoos,
all that sort of stuff. It's all $2.50 a kilo, so it just gets weighed.
Yeah, but and then we do a final check just in case the weight price puts us over retail. We'll actually look at the retail price for that product and make sure that we're at least 20 cents under.
That's absolutely brilliant. And Greg, you've actually started producing meals, haven't you, with all these donations? I remember going through your warehouse. You've been very creative.
Yeah, during COVID, we had, because all the hospitality sector closed down, the fruit and veg was still growing. So it had to go somewhere and it all came to us. So we had days where we were getting 30 tons of tomatoes lobbing on our doors or 25 tons of pumpkin. So we set up an arrangement with Mexex, who are a manufacturing company here, whose business had scaled down because of the collapse of the export market. And they manufactured tomato-based pasta sauce, right, pumpkin soup, and pumpkin-based baby food for us. And we actually have packages that we could do. It was all aseptic pack, 12-month shelf life. We distributed those through our food hubs so that we weren't wasting any of that food. So we're going to continue that on now. We're actually doing more research on what products, and we've actually got a university study just about to commence where we're going to look at social enterprises that can handle those sort of surpluses on call with more sophisticated manufacturing. In a simplistic term, we also have a relationship with Bedford Industries. Bedford have now a commercial kitchen over at Kidman Park, I think it is. And they use our food surplus to train their chefs. And these are all people with disabilities. They get them apprenticeships as chefs. And the food comes back to us as single serve frozen meals, which we distribute through our food hubs again. Spaghetti bolognese or sausages.
But those sort of good basic meals, Greg, because our community centres are being smashed with people coming to ask for food, and many of them are doing hundreds of meals a week. So, and I know that you work in with our community centres as well, but it's also about teaching people about what to go and buy and make themselves. Mm. But before you can do that, isn't it great that they also can have convenience because if they're busy working, trying to manage families?
That's exactly right. And there are still people who believe that if they've got $20, that going to Hungry Jack's is better value because they can get four meals. Without
Not four meals worth of nutritional value, let's say.
No, that's exactly right. And and without bashing people over their head with the nutrition stick, we need to slowly lead them down that way and suggest, look, if you have that sort of money, this is what you can buy in a supermarket, even just a normal supermarket. And these are the sort of meals you can make if you have some basic understanding of cooking. So we do meal packs as well where we have the recipe cards on the front and it's got all the ingredients.
A bit like the Marley spoon.
Very concept. Similar to that, except ours only cost $4.
Yes.
And we've got 12 of those recipes and we sell thousands of them in the food hubs.
Fabulous.
And particularly in places like Alice Springs where we've got First Nations people coming in to do their shopping. They don't have a house to live in, but they've all got mobile phones and they can look up the recipe online. They can actually look at a YouTube channel showing someone cooking that recipe that we sell because we've got MasterChef contestants cooking those recipes in a series of videos. So it's that old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. We work on the basis that if we can get 10% of our clientele to have a go at cooking for themselves, at least that's 10% that are going to be less reliant on takeaways, hopefully have more of their income available.
Better health, not clogging up the health system.
Yeah.
So, Greg, how do people find out about your service? Can anybody walk in off the street? Who can use food bank?
Generally not. So anyone who's hungry or is having difficulty getting food, we need to be able to identify those people. So a starting point historically has been that people would go to see one of 700 referring agencies and would get referred to food bank.
So who's a typical referring agency?
Oh, Anglicare, Uniting Communities, St Vincent de Paul, Mission Australia, Junction Australia. But that is now expanding now to schools. So we have about 150 schools who refer. We know that the principal and the pastoral care worker will generally know if a family is struggling. We have utility companies who send clients to us, banks. So any of these organisations where they know that someone is going to perhaps default on a loan or be put into insolvency or bankruptcy, if they can get a hand by coming to food bank.
And that's the same now with rental increases that are going up $150, $200,
$250. Oh, absolutely. And more we're seeing people coming in saying, I actually don't need help with any social services. I actually just need food. So we're actually in the process of developing a self-assessment tool where people who come in off the street can actually fill in a very simple questionnaire confidentially and it'll tell us the circumstances around why they're coming. We will let them then shop. And depending on their circumstance, we'll say, okay, yes, you can shop 10 times or you can shop once. If you come back next time, you'll probably need to go and get some support service somewhere. And here are 10 agencies within your suburb that you live in that could be able to help you with that. What we see ourselves as a way of people are not necessarily reliant on going to these welfare agencies all the time. We found in historically with the likes of Anglicare, for example, people would go back every week just to get a food voucher. By us doing what we do, they're only going back every 10 weeks. So the very limited resources that the welfare agencies have are maximised to some degree by what we do. I think in the future, we're very much expecting that we are going to be seeing more and more just normal people who don't see themselves as being part of the welfare sector. And how we tackle that and how we make sure that there's got to be some gateway, I suppose, for want of a better word. If we opened it to the general public, we know that we would struggle to get the donations from the likes of, you know, the major food companies, because they'd be saying, well, hang on, you're competing with the Woolworths and Coles. As it is at the moment where we can say, well, no, we're not. We are hand on heart. It's only going to fit people who couldn't afford to shop there anyway, that we are able to maintain a very clear demarcation between us and what would be deemed to be a supermarket.
I'm talking to Greg Patterson, CEO of Food Bank South Australia. Greg, how can an organisation become a referring organisation to you? Is there a criteria around that?
Oh, come and talk to us. That's easy. Come and talk to us. Have a look around. I was in Port Lincoln 2 weeks ago and went to community centre at the community house.
How was it?
It was fantastic. So we are going to be providing food on a weekly basis down to the little shop there and helping them expand the services into more of a food hub. We're actually going to put two staff members there.
That's brilliant.
And the community house at Port Lincoln is becoming a referral centre. So if they've got somebody coming in who they know is struggling, they'll be able to refer them through to go into that room there and shop. And you'll be able to get the food at food bank prices, and we'll have people there that can then take them through that. And we think more and more that wraparound service of being us in partnerships with well-established, similarly ethical organisations, I suppose. In our view, why would we go in and reinvent the wheel? If there's already a group or a community centre that's doing good work there and is trusted by the local community, all we would want to do is go in and augment those services and provide perhaps some additional things like a food service in there.
And of course, being place where community already trusts, community centres are ideal because they have kitchens, they have store areas. They're manned,
and like here at Glandor, they've got the community gardens. You know, if we can, if people coming in and getting food can then say, "Oh, while I'm here, I'll do a cooking class," or "I'd love to be able to access the community garden," or "Can we start a community garden?" Even, I think particularly in country areas, I see this as being a really big opportunity in the next couple of years.
I do as well. I've just been across to Kangaroo Island. I was talking to you during the week, and they don't have any food bank over there, but you talked about where you can do pop-up, which can be helpful.
Yeah, we've been looking at that ever since I spoke to you a couple of weeks ago,
terrific.
Kerry. I've been looking at that one. So, yes, we will have more discussions in the future.
Because it is important that regional areas get services, and it's so difficult for them. So, Greg, you're just talking about the cooking classes and educating people. Is it also an opportunity once people come to a food bank hub or become involved that you can help them referral out to other wraparound services that they might need? Maybe English is their second language.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe they're looking for work, childcare, housing.
Absolutely. And I think that's where we see the link with the community centres would be good, and also with the local councils. So if the council already has services there, it doesn't necessarily have to be located on the spot, but if we can say, well, we're linked with Port Lincoln Council and they've got a service for migrants or things like that, I would see people coming into food, the opportunities I think are endless as to what other services they could potentially be tapping into. It really just depends on the capacity of the local community to provide that. So, you know, there might be, I know in the Adelaide metro area, we've been talking to Sprout, the cooking school, and they're very keen to link in the future with potential, you know, in-place cooking demonstrations and coaching, tapping into lessons. But in a country area, there might be the local Lions Club or the local Country Women's Association.
Ah, now you're talking the CWA with their fabulous scones and jelly cakes.
Well, it's a much younger. They're being rediscovered.
They are. They're reinventing themselves.
And they've got a younger cohort going through now. You know, the CWA is starting to get cool again. A bit like men's sheds, actually.
Yeah. And I know with community centres with their gardens, what we're trying to do is encourage garden to plate. Addressing that where people can go and get some ingredients and fresh things from yourself, then maybe have some herbs in the community garden, put that together, make a meal.
Absolutely. And again, that we don't mind. I mean, Food Bank is very happy if we're run out of business. You know, if no one needs us and the community is actually supporting itself, that they don't need that emergency food supply, that would be fabulous. You know, we'll go and turn our attention to another area that does do it. But I see the next couple of years as a huge opportunity to really show what local communities do. Without necessarily, I'm working on getting the government to support that and also local councils. But I think there can be an awful lot done very, very effectively and efficiently by mobilising all the different services that are out in communities at the moment. To me, it's just a case of how do we tap into it?
Absolutely. And Greg, Food Bank is now expanding into Northern Territory already there. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I know. I now look after the whole guts of South Australia and Northern Territory, or Middle Earth, as I like to call it.
Just don't go in your suit. You're not going to be pretty cash up there.
You do. Oh, I don't know. Darwin's, some of the places in Darwin are pretty ritzy. But we opened up in Alice Springs in 2021. Food Bank has always sent food to Darwin because the Baptist Church has been operating Food Bank up there for about 12 years. But, of course, if they're only relying on the local food industry in Darwin, it's very limiting. There's not a lot of – it's really a few supermarkets, and there's not even a major supermarket warehouse up there other than Metcash. All the food comes up from Adelaide. And so we were sending food through Alice Springs to Darwin to the Baptist Church, and it was just not stopping in Alice Springs. And we just kept saying, well, look, surely we should be setting up a site here. So we finally agreed that it would be better if we did that because we had the expertise. We got Newmont Mining actually came to the party to sponsor it. And Alice Springs is now our fifth busiest site. There's only 24,000 people in Alice Springs. But we have people driving 600 kilometres a week to come and get to Alice Springs to shop and then getting in their car and driving 600 kilometres back. And families are coming in, you know, where in Adelaide, it's, yes, I'm feeding two people, two adults and three kids. In Alice Springs, I'm feeding five adults and 15 kids.
Oh, goodness, that's a big difference.
The best thing was I had a lady, a First Nations lady there, who actually, I was helping her take trolley loads of food out to their car. And she actually said to me, you realise you're actually going to save people's lives here.
Oh, isn't that brilliant?
And it, so it put it in perspective. So interestingly, we've not experienced any of the crime or social issues that Alice Springs has experienced. It's always been an issue there. The housing issue in Alice Springs is significant, and mainly because the services, the medical services used to go out to the communities. There's about nine communities outside of Alice Springs. The government used to send the health services out there for their doctors, nurses, renal dialysis, things like that. Now they stopped all those services. So to go to a doctor, these poor people have to come into town, and of course they can't leave their kids on the community, so they have to bring them as well. So these kids got nowhere to stay and are wandering around the city at night because there's 20 people living in a town camp. So, you know, to me, it's a case of the government looking at back at what's going to work and what's going to help keep the people on their community.
So you're helping feed them.
We are. And then last year we were invited by Food Bank Australia to take over the responsibility for Darwin as well. So the Baptist Church had been very good. They've tried their best for 12 years. But again, the problem was they could not separate themselves, the food bank operation, from the church operation. It was, you know, they needed to set up a separate business entity, and Food Bank is very strictly non-denominational, non-church. So we went in and we took over the operation July last year, July 1st. So it's been exactly a year, and it's grown. We've moved to a new site out at Palmerston, just outside of the Darwin main metro area. Palmerston is really high needs central in Darwin. It's a really busy site now. They're doing, I think, about 80 families a day or something now. And by this time next year, we're going to open a site in Katherine. So we've got funding through the federal government disaster relief funds. So we'll have a site open in Katherine next year.
Well, congratulations, Greg. It's an incredible organisation and the work that you're doing. Really appreciate you coming to talk to us today about food security. We're very blessed that we have Food Bank and community centres. If you are not working in with Food Bank, then please give Greg a call. How do people get in touch?
Yes, on email is gregp@foodbanksa.org.au, or our office number is 8351 1136. That's area code 08.
Thank you for coming in to
share. It's a pleasure. Thanks, Gary.
And thank you for listening and engaging with our community conversations today. Every week, we aim to bring you stories from far and wide, across South Australia and beyond. People who are game changers in our community, doing great work, plus general topics of community interest. If you have any subjects you think we should cover or any other feedback, please let us know at communitycentressa.asn.au. And feel free to share this podcast so we can engage more people in our next community conversation.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au.